So first, thanks to Ben for bringing us all together. I mean, half of the fun is hearing what everybody else is doing, and I'm really looking forward to hearing what everybody in the audience is doing. I'm going to actually try to get us to this question of how do we link the human rights laws and policies actually to outcomes. But so I don't forget, I just want to mention we do, for those who actually want the data, we do have some USB keys. I've got a few up here. I have terrific team members here, Isabel and Willie, can you stand up, who do, two of the dozen people do fantastic work on this. They also have USB keys and a handheld sheet on how you can download data. Okay, well, so why am I going to make the case that we can actually totally link this to population health? That's what I think everybody in the room knows. Well, our health is, I say this not just as a policy person, but as a physician, our health is not largely determined by clinical care. It's by social determinants, about at least half or more of what makes us sick, and certainly what guides the disparities in life course really has to do with our living conditions, our community, our housing, discrimination we face, poverty, income, workplaces. That's why the WHO had a commission on social determinants. Now, if you look at those social determinants of health, you'd also find that turns out there are international human rights agreements on almost all of them. So I've just listed a handful of the really scores of human rights relevant international agreements they are, but if you look at the basic ones, if you look at CEDAW around gender, if you look at the Convention on the Rights of the Child, and certainly if you look at the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, I challenge you to find any social determinant of health that is not in there. They're amazing documents. So, what's the problem? Okay, this is the problem, and this is the quiz. So, does anybody know where the pictures on the right are? Okay, so those card, or what decade those cardboard boxes are from? Okay, the cardboard boxes are from last year. They're from Geneva. These are pictures slightly surreptitiously taken when we were visiting the giving talks at the High Commission on Human Rights in Geneva, only surreptitiously because we have so much respect for our colleagues there, but we're really appalled, actually, that they were still putting all the documents about how countries are doing on photocopied papers in big cardboard boxes. Hardly the thing to get global participation or input or transparency. Now, they do have these reports online now too, but they're incredibly lengthy. They not only don't answer the quantitative questions that Scott and everybody else on the panel were calling for, but they also don't make it easy for anybody in any country to know how's their country doing on these agreements. So should we be surprised in the practice side that they don't feel very relevant? I don't think so. We have to move from this world where right now, if you wanted to read all of the reports on just take one agreement, Convention on the Rights of the Child, we're talking thousands and thousands of hours because it's so many pages for every country. So, okay, other than our World Policy Analysis Center team members, how many people have read at least five reports on the Convention on the Rights of the Child, or actually five reports on in full on any human rights convention? Okay, so we get the panelists, but only half the panelists, and that's it. So we don't have them in a form where these are living documents, and they could be. So that's the notion of what we've tried to do at World, is move that 20,000 hours into something that could be a 20-second experience, You're going to have it here in split seconds, but also hopefully you could share it with anybody else on your phone, on your laptop. Just go to worldpolicycenter.org so we can increase the number of people who actually know what's implemented. That's the goal. There is, however, and we've already heard about this from other panelists, sort of a whole rigorous process to how do we make, if we're going to condense these lengthy reports on rights, but also because we're going to do it with legislations, which we do in 193 countries at world, we do it with all the world's constitutions. If we're going to condense them, we have to have a pretty rigorous process for doing that. So what's involved? First, we have people fluent in 5 of the 6 UN languages most of the time. We have dozens of other languages that are available sort of on an on-call basis. We do double coding for every single piece of legislation. We verify all outliers. We do updates so that you can track trends in laws and policies. But here's the most important thing. We look at laws. What are countries doing to comply with these conventions? We look at policies, but we don't begin with any one attitude about what should be in it. We don't start from a US perspective or a Canadian perspective or an Indian or South African perspective. We read 20 countries' laws and say, what are the different elements? Then we create categories to capture those elements. Then we read another 40. And if there's something new, we go back and read all the rest. So we base it on what's really in the laws. What World does is we do it across all the areas of social determinants of health that we can get the capacity to do. We're building a piece at a time, obviously funding and person constrained, person power constrained. But here you see the areas. So pretty much the social determinants, poverty, discrimination, series of income, series of population groups, policies relevant to children, family, aging, as well as direct health policies. We do this with the hope of doing a series of things. First, the transparency and accountability about these instruments. So I'll just take CEDAW. This is the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women. Most of the world has ratified this. I'm sorry for those who are from the US, you're going to see the US turn up red as a non-ratifier on a lot of these maps. But the question is then, what's been done? First, for most of us who have not read all the reports, and even in the reports, they're only done every 5 years, they don't systematically look, did the country take the first step, passing laws and enacting policies that are consistent with it? Did they do anything? So, here's an example of what that looks like when instead of having to read thousands of pages, you can actually just look at a map quickly. Well, according to CEDAW, we should treat boys and girls the same when it comes to any law, including child marriage. What this map shows is every country that's a CEDAW signatory, but still treats boys and girls differently. So if you're in orange or yellow, you allow girls to be married off younger than boys with parental consent. And you can see pretty rapidly there are a lot of countries that have signed but haven't taken the first step of making it real in terms of their national law. Okay, here's one that is not often described as a gender, but I think we think of it clearly as gender-related, which is 187 countries have paid maternity leave. That's the good news. Only about half of them have paid paternity leave. That's the bad news. If men are going to have equal rights in the home and in raising kids, and if women are going to have equal rights in the workplace, men and women have to be treated equally in parenting. There's reason in CEDAW to think this should be a global standard, but everything that's yellow doesn't. they treat child rearing as a clearly gendered activity. We can do the same with the Convention on the Rights of the Child. Here, by the way, it's now just the United States. So Somalia and South Sudan ratified, so we're down to the US, anybody who wants to do some advocacy during this election. But some basic things in CRC, still not at the law stage, protecting children from exploitation within the CRC. This map shows how long are children protected from hazardous work, so worse forms of labor. And you can see that in a number of the countries, children are allowed to legally do it. So we can see, again, this gap. We do the same for inclusive education, whether you're thinking of the CRC or you're thinking of the CRPD, the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. All children, irrespective of disability or difference, should be able to go to school. And yet, lots of the world either has no public special ed or children are not integrated into the regular classroom. But this kind of information was hidden before in those deep reports. I'm going to fast forward through some of our other slides just to say we can do this with piece after piece, and I'm happy to spend more time on it. But I do want to focus a little bit before, in the next few minutes, on then looking at outcomes. So here, before I go to the actual numbers, so how do you go from mapping it to outcomes? The exciting thing that global surveys allow us to do now, the tremendous work at UNICEF in working with countries on the mixed survey, the work of the demographic and health surveys mean that we have data on households, on individuals' outcomes in over 90 countries. Okay, so now we have the policies, they're now quantitative. That's how you get to a map. We have indicator measurements of, is there paid leave? Is there not? At what age do you have child labor? Don't you? How long are you paid for paid leave, et cetera? We also have, from DHS and MIX across 90 countries, outcomes. How are people faring in nutrition? How long are they living? So we were able to do the most rigorous kind of research, which is link those policy indicators longitudinally. So what's that enable you to do? You say, the country changed a law, were people better off? Knowing that we had really short time, these are all on one slide, and I apologize for that, but full papers are also on our website at worldpolicycenter.org. So let me walk us through these three. Maternity leave. Clearly in the human rights documents, in CEDAW, I showed you the map. Most countries have it, some don't. Suriname, Papua New Guinea, a few small South Pacific island states, the United States don't yet have paid maternity leave. Does it matter? Yes, it turns out it does. So when countries increase the length of maternity leave, it lowers infant mortality, and it has significant impact. We know why. It does a few things. I have one of the other results here. Kids get vaccinated. Parents are able to take their kids for vaccines. Kids are more likely to be breastfed. We know breastfeeding lowers mortality 3 to 5-fold, but it doesn't do any good for the World Health Organization or us as public health workers to tell low-income women that they have to breastfeed if they have to go to work to survive and that work does not allow them to breastfeed and they have no leave. That's why it works, but we can demonstrate that it does work, controlling for a whole host of other factors. So do social determinants. So free primary education to girls, when they become mothers, their children are surviving longer. So we have longitudinal data. We track when the moms, whether or not the country provided free education, and we see the outcomes. So I'm just going to close and say we think part of this partnership, it's crucial to have outreach and collaborations with civil society. We do, we've done a series of webinars globally on gender, on poverty, in multiple languages in over 40 countries. We have infographics. The data is fully downloadable, and we look forward to other people being able to share and use it because we really see this as a collective effort. Thank you very much.